Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my great, fantastic co-host and business partner, Al McDonald. Al, what are you saying these days?
Well, I'm very excited about today's podcast because I think we have a great guest with some very, very important and timely information. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to the conversation and I'm looking forward to how it'll help our listeners.
Well, a couple of shout outs have to go out this morning before we get started as well. So for years, I've been looking at something called the Benefits Alliance, which is about 34 member firms across the country. And Carolyn Egan, the president of the Benefits Alliance, convinced me to join. And at their first event, one of the reasons why I did join the first event I went to in April, I met a bunch of people that were there. They were talking to other advisors. And one of the people I met was a fellow named Chris Tello at EHN Canada. And I had such a wonderful conversation with Chris, and I had said to him at that point, I would love to have you on the podcast. He said, that would be great, but I have an even better representative for our company. So joining us today, I couldn't be more excited. It was Rochelle Hildebrand. Rochelle is a compassionate leader and seasoned executive at EHN Canada, where she is currently serves as vice president. Since joining EHN in 2014 in the marketing department, she has progressed through successful leadership roles, bringing a deep understanding of both the operational and human sides of mental health and addiction treatment. Rochelle has been instrumental in implementing measure-based care across EHN's programs, a system that ensures data-backed, individualized treatment for clients and families. Her leadership style emphasizes collaboration, empowerment, and a relentless focus on creating supportive environments for both patients and staff. Under her guidance, EHN continues to transform lives through innovative inpatient virtual programs serving individuals dealing with substance abuse, trauma, PTSD, anxiety, depression, and eating disorders. Rochelle is passionate about driving access to care, expanding digital solutions, and equipping teams to deliver the highest standard of support to those who need it most. Rochelle, super excited that you're here, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I want to start with your bio, because I wouldn't have thought someone that started in marketing would be involved in this side of the business. And I find that fascinating. So I'd like to talk about your journey, because I think it's been a bit of an unconventional path, right? So how do you think that's impacted your leadership, your communication, and the ultimate impact on the mental health space?
Yeah, it has been an interesting journey. And I think when people find out how long I've been at EHN, which is coming up on 12 years, people are always like, how did that happen? And I always kind of start with, well, you know, I took a one-year contract as a marketing coordinator for a treatment center. And I thought, 1 year's enough, that I just, you know, I'm just out of school, I just need a job. And like, 1 year, 1 year is great. And I really did not think that it was something that I wanted to do long term. It wasn't sort of a passion of mine. And what ended up happening was that I never left, because I found really deep satisfaction in working in an industry where we get to make a difference in people's lives. We get to help families. And ultimately, we get to empower people to be happier, to be healthier, to be well. And when I thought about the alternative, which would be maybe selling something or something like that, I just thought, where else could I do work with such meaning? And so it became a real passion for me. And I like to say with this work, sometimes people really they get out quickly or they realize they're lifers because it means so much. And I ended up being that kind of person.
I love when I hear the stories about people falling into something that they never thought they would get into and then falling in love and having such a passion for it. I do have to ask you though, because I don't know if you ever heard the podcast that we did with Dipti Purbo, who was a director of the Dorothy Lee Hospice, and just a wonderful person and just built for that role. And listening to you, obviously you're passionate about EHN Canada, but I have to imagine you hear stories that maybe not the average person hears about challenges people are going through. And to me, I would find that difficult not to take that on and take it into my personal life and have it affect me emotionally and maybe psychologically. How do you do that? How do you hear all these stories, but still look after your own mental health, your own physical health, so that you can continue to make an impact? Because to me, that's, I would find that challenging. So I'm always curious and I admire people like yourself that can do that and help so many people.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I mean, the first thing I have to do is I have to give a shout out to our frontline staff, because really when people ask me, like, how do I deal with it? The first place that my mind goes is, well, I don't have to deal with it near as much as our frontline folks, right? Like mm-hmm. they're the ones who are with our clients and our patients every single day, supporting them and hearing them. And so whenever it feels tough for me, I think, well, I know it's tougher for them. But I think really the thing that actually people forget is that we hear a lot of really, really tough stories, and we hear a lot of really difficult stories, but we also hear just as many success stories, right? So there's a balance. You know, for as often as you hear it didn't go well for somebody, or they're not doing well, or they're in a really bad place, or they've had a really hard life, you also get to see our folks, our clients come back 5 years later, 10 years later. You get to see that they've had kids, they've reconnected with their families, and that they're happy and well. And so that's really the thing that I think keeps most of us going. And then I would honestly say the truth is that there isn't really a way not to bring it home with you. That just isn't human. And so there are times when stories and clients and things that happen affect us really deeply and really personally. It's sort of part of the work. And there is a balance, I think, to not letting it overwhelm you. And I think the positivity and the good stories and the success stories really help to keep that going.
Rochelle, can you maybe talk a little bit about how EHN, obviously being a leader in digital care and a lot of innovation in that space, but how has EHN gone about keeping that experience, you know, human and personal, especially when we're talking about things like your measurement-based care and virtual therapy? And if you're doing it virtually like this, how do you keep that human touch in the loop?
So when it comes to virtual care, what we've seen again and again is that it does help clients and it is effective and people get well. As long as they're in the right level of care, right, they're in the right severity, they are going to get well. But when you're delivering sort of a large scale virtual health program like we are, I think the question that I often ask myself when we're thinking about our operations and the way that we work is, you have to ask yourself with everything is this something that needs a human touch or is this something that can be automated? Right? And there are things that we would never lose the human touch in, right? Of course, when we talk about therapy, that's really important. And there are digital interventions for therapy and they do work well. But when we're talking about the kind of programs that we deliver, which are intensive online programs, that therapeutic relationship and that therapeutic alliance with the therapist and the client is still the most important part. And it's the same with, for example, if somebody is looking for help and they want to call EHN, they're always going to be able to access a human on the other side of the phone. They're always going to be able to access somebody who understands what they're going through, who cares about them and wants to help them find the right care and wants to help them navigate through that really difficult experience of getting well and getting help. But on the flip side, you also get to free up clinicians and staff from the tasks that they don't want to do anyways, right? When you think about a therapist, like a therapist gets into this work to be with people, to be with clients, to help them, to support them. And in a virtual environment, we can really remove a lot of the other work that's not direct client care or reduce it, right? So therapists don't want to be doing admin. They don't want to be doing paperwork. They don't want to be writing reports, but they have to. It's part of good practice. It's part of safe practice. We have to get that done. They don't want to be scheduling appointments, right? All of these different pieces. And so in a virtual environment, what we can actually do is we can use technology. We can automate a lot of that kind of work so that counselors and therapists have to do it less and less, giving them more time to just be face-to-face virtually with the clients, right? And to really focus on them and focus on the work that they like to do. And I think that does promote a lot more of that sort of keeping it feeling personal and promoting that empathy. Because if we're able to reduce some of those tasks, that means if a client calls in between sessions because they're not having a great time, that therapist has more time for them and isn't sitting there in the back of their mind going, okay, but I have 7 reports to write, or I have 6 appointments to book, or I have this. And so I think there's a great balance that can be achieved there. And look, it's a work in progress. Our own clinicians will tell you, hey, Rachel, I still have to write reports. But, you know, we work consistently to continue to try and automate as much of those things as we can. And that's something that we've been focused on for the last couple of years, and we will continue to focus on. And so it's just about freeing up more time for them to be with people.
Rachel, I'm going to assume that in many cases, virtual care would be accessible in situations that a person might not be able to meet someone in person. I mean, I can just think of if you're living in a small town or whatever, and you have limited resources, but you can hop on a call like this and suddenly get some of that care. Is that true? And do you have like an example, like a success story that maybe you could share with us?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. So there's a lot of reasons why people opt for virtual care. And we know that since the pandemic, it has really skyrocketed in popularity. You know, we were doing it before the pandemic. And I would say in our outpatient clients, about 75% were in person and maybe 25% were online. And now 5 years post-COVID, we are at about 15% in person and 85% online. There really is this real desire for it. And I think accessibility is a huge part of it. And accessibility is more than what we often think about. Yes, it's absolutely folks living in smaller towns where they may not have access to a psychotherapist or an occupational therapist or a psychologist. But it's also parents, like single parents, who it's going to cost them money to get somebody to watch their kids or to extend their daycare, their childcare hours. And then they also have the cost of the therapy appointment on top of that. And that's maybe just not super accessible. Or folks who struggle with anxiety and getting out of their house and going to a whole new building and navigating getting into a group therapy session is really a lot for them. And they put off getting care because of it. And honestly, for a lot of people too that are still working, there's just simple logistics involved that, like, if you have a busy job and you've worked a very intense 8-9 hour day, do you really want to get in your car and drive 30 minutes and go to your appointment and drive another 30 minutes back? So there's a lot of real uses in terms of supporting folks in rural areas, but also people with different life challenges and life situations. And so I do think absolutely that virtual care has expanded accessibility greatly.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And as you were saying that, I was thinking about the other day, there was a day earlier this week where I had to get gas, which is kind of necessary. And I'm like, where am I going to fit that in today? So to your point, if someone's trying to fit in another appointment and driving there and having the kids looked after and all that kind of thing, I mean, virtual just is so handy there. Mm-hmm. Rachel, in my world, I talk a lot about culture and creating supportive environments for staff. I mean, we have tons of chief people officers on here and business owners that we talk to about that. But you gave a shout out to the frontline workers because they're the ones who are really dealing and seeing these stories and seeing these challenges, but to your point, seeing the wins as well. So I love that. I love that you added that part in because that must be really rewarding. What I wanted to ask you about is, because I think this would be particularly important for your employees, how do you build that team culture where you can be supportive for others because that's part of what you do, but also taking care of themselves at the same time?
Yeah, there's so much to this, and I think it's a great question. I think there are a couple of different sides to it. I think there's some really practical stuff that we have to do because mental health care is hard work. I mean, all health care is hard work. It is sometimes physically hard when you're talking about folks in physical health care. When we talk about mental health care, you know, there is a lot of intellectual and emotionally taxing parts to this work. And we have to make sure that we're putting in some practical solutions because this is hard work. And it also right now, it's very busy work because we don't have enough accessible mental health care in this country. And so we are busy, right? And so there are a lot of really practical solutions. There are things like really understanding caseloads and making sure that you understand the very operational and practical pieces of exactly how much time are we spending with each client a day? And how much time are we spending documenting that time? And how much time do we as a team need to come together and talk through our cases and how are they doing? Because if you don't have a really good understanding of the practicality of your work, of your caseloads, it's very, very easy to overload your frontline team, right? To the point where it's very hard for them to have any balance so that they can take care of themselves because there is so much work to do. There are a lot of practicalities in making sure you're giving people the tools they need to do their job well, right? Whether that's technology support, like many healthcare organizations, we're in the middle of rolling out AI documentation support. So again, reducing the amount of time that they have to spend doing that admin work, making sure that all of their technology works, making sure that they have what they need to be able to do their jobs well. And then on the other side, there is really a culture of support that we want to create and teamwork because this isn't easy work and doing it alone is harder. And we have to make sure we're creating space and we do this where all the frontline teams are able to come together. The counselors are able to come together and they're able to discuss how clients are doing. They're able to get input and support from other clinicians and talk through how to handle it and how are they going to go through it. And sometimes you just need to debrief. Sometimes you've had a really tough time with a client and you need to be able to go into the office next to you and talk to the therapist next to you and just say, this was really impactful. This was really hard. And so I think one of the things that is really, really important is creating that culture where we're relying on each other as a team. And this is something that many companies do employee surveys and like, how are you feeling? And one of the things that we always score really well on is the sort of question about, I feel like I can count on my team to help me. The people on my team are going to support me. And it's really important to have those people that you can relate to. And so making sure we make space for people to do that within the workday is really important.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a very good job there. And as you were answering, one of the things I was thinking about, and you made a point of being able to go to that person next door to you and have that conversation. And it brings up, you know, this whole return to work thing. And I'm a big fan of being virtual. I mean, Al knows this, but we're in the office 3 days a week. And to me, there's so much value in exactly to your point. I can be having a bad day and I can go up to Al's office or I can go to Joe's office next to me and just say, I'm having a terrible day and I just need 10 minutes of your time just to rant. And then you'll tell me everything's okay. But I think that's so important to have the comfort where people can do that. I've had that on my own team where people say like, I just don't know what to do about this situation. And I think creating that environment where people know they can come and have that conversation and it's okay that you're not having that perfect day every day, right? Like, I think that's important to know that there's no one out there. And again, when we have these conversations and especially private conversations, we hear this imposter syndrome all the time, right? And I'm glad to see leadership acknowledging that I don't know all the answers and I'm not going to know all the answers all the time, but that's okay because no one expects you to, right? So I'm so glad you highlighted that being able to talk to someone. And if you're not in an environment where you're like us in the office 3 days, then Rochelle, if I was having a bad day and I wanted to call you up and send you a Teams meeting, I'm sure you would say, yeah, no problem. Let's have that virtual coffee together. So it's possible both ways, right? So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, it is. And at EHM, we work in a variety of ways because we have our inpatient facilities where clients are living with us for, you know, 7 to 9 weeks. And so those are fully in-person jobs. They have to be, right? Like,
yeah,
that's what we're delivering. And so those folks do have that office next to them and they have that space. And then in our virtual programs, we have some hybrid employees, but the majority of our virtual team is fully remote. And so we have to create that space, right? We have to create that. So some of our managers have sort of office hours, we call them open door, where they open up a Teams chat and anybody can just pop in, or they open up a video call and anybody can drop in and get help. And we make sure that in a virtual environment, we're intentionally scheduling that time for people to connect and get support. Because if you don't schedule it, it can be a little bit harder. But yeah, me personally, I do. If somebody messages me on Teams and says, hey, can I talk? Can we chat? I always do my best to make time for that because other people do that for me, right? They make time to chat with me and when I need it.
And I love that idea about having virtual office hours, right? That's the open door that you could open it up and be working. And if someone pops in, great. And if they don't, that's okay. Success leaves clues, and there's one right there. I love that. I might steal that idea.
Rochelle, maybe we can talk a little bit more about how mental health has become a bigger part of many benefits programs. And I think it's safe to say that it has. EAPs have been around for a while, and you know, more and more the people are just aware of it. But I think it's probably also safe to say that implementation can be a little bit inconsistent sometimes, and people don't always know what's available or how to bring it to the program or what's going to have the biggest impact. So if there's maybe one key thing that you wish that more employers understood or did differently when it comes to mental health coverage, what would it be?
This is such an easy one for me because this is something I love to talk about. But what I think would really make the biggest difference in benefits plans that employers are offering is to offer more comprehensive mental health support. So what I mean by that is most employers are doing a great job with people who have mild mental health concerns. They have EAP, they have individual counseling through paramedical benefits, right? Like that's great. And that can really do a lot for the majority of folks. But mental health, like any other health condition, has a spectrum of severity, right? We have people who are in early stages, who are mild. Their ability to function and their ability to work and ability to be part of their family or their friends or their community hasn't been impacted too much yet. And then we get further along the spectrum and we go to moderate. And now symptoms are becoming more frequent, more intense, more common. And now our ability to function is starting to be impacted, but maybe we're still at work and we're hanging on and we're kind of, and things can go further and further into those higher severity cases where somebody is at a point where they just absolutely can't work anymore, or they can't parent, or they can't take care of a family member. And so what we do right now in Canada, we do a really great job with mild. We offer ICBT, we offer individual counseling, we offer EAP. Those are wonderful. But what we miss, where we have a gap, is in that more moderate and severe category. And the truth is that those are the folks who are most likely to end up on a long-term leave or a long-term disability claim and be gone from work and miss out on their lives and miss out on their work. And so I wish that we were, and this is what I really am striving for, is I would love to see our benefits packages change to incorporate all of those levels of care so that we can really support employees. And from an employer perspective, we can intervene before it gets to the point where they have to leave work. Because as an employer, we don't want them to leave work. And as an individual, they don't want to leave work. It's not good for them financially. It's usually not good for them emotionally. And so if we were able to incorporate that kind of benefit, and there are ways that we can do it, and it is something that we offer, you can really support your employees in a more fulsome way. And the truth is that 90, 95% of your employees aren't going to need more than mild. But the 5 to 10% who do are the ones who really, really, really need it. They really need more, and you want to help them to keep them at work. So I think that would make a huge impact.
So you talked about the what, and then you alluded a little bit to the how. Do you want to dive in a little bit more to, okay, like if employers did want to do that, how would they do that?
I think this is still really in its early phases, but certainly it's something that we are offering, and we do have some benefits groups, some employers, some brokers that are working with us, and we do offer a spectrum of care to employers. They can come to us or they can go to their broker and they can go to Benefits Alliance and they can work with us to incorporate multiple levels of mental health care. So, you know, we can do everything from sort of making sure you have coverage from moderate to all the way up to severe. And we do that on a per employee per month basis so that we know that not everyone's going to need it. And then you get to come and say to your employees, hey, look, no matter what you need, like we've got you covered and we can help you. And we don't have to wait until we've passed the short-term disability and we've gone on to long-term disability. So we can provide that help and we have been doing it. And the folks that we've been working with, they've communicated to us how happy they are with the benefit because we're able to tell them, you know, we don't disclose the employee, but we're able to tell them, hey, like we helped 7 of your folks this year. And we can say they stayed at work, they did well, and we can really provide that support.
Rochelle, I'm so glad we're chatting about this because all of our audience essentially are Canadian business leadership. And Al, when we first met, Al had made a comment, and Al's more on the individual side of our business, but he had made a comment, hey, how come I've never heard of you? Right. And quite frankly, before I met Chris Tello at the Benefits Alliance event, I didn't know much either. And I've since learned quite a bit about your organization. I've become a really big fan of Beach in Canada. And I'm so glad we're having this conversation because I know this is going to generate either conversations with people that I'm chatting with, but I wouldn't be surprised if you have people reaching out and sending you DMs because that happens quite a bit on a great episode. And I think this has been a great episode. So really, really happy that Chris put us in touch. And our first call was great. And I think this one is even better. We just happened to be recording it. But we're at the point of the episode, which is my favorite part, where Al asks his signature question. So if you're up for it, we'll let Al take it away.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So, Rochelle, a society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about, and this could be from your professional point of view, it could be from your personal point of view, whatever you like, can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you might be planting?
I would say the thing that I would love to see happen for Canadians that I'm trying to be part of this solution for is really exactly what I just talked about, the expansion of employee benefits when it comes to mental health care, because I would love us to be in a world where, I make this analogy often, but where mental health care benefits are the same as dental benefits, right? So if you have an issue, you know you're going to be taken care of when you have a problem with your oral health, right? You know you have regular checkups, you know you have coverage for multiple different procedures and different things that you might need. And so when you are with an employer who has dental, you don't worry about it. And what I would love to see is mental health benefits looking very similar to dental benefits for employees, where they just know that they have access to regular care, regular checkups, and more intensive treatment options when and if they need it. And when I think about what that would mean for Canadians, what that would mean for the future, that means a huge expansion of access for people. I think that means healthier families. I think that means cycles broken, because we know that this can be either genetic or cyclical, or, you know, run in families, especially when it comes to things like addiction. So I see and would love to see a future. And I think this is sort of one of my really big audacious goals, is to continue to push forward and help employers get on board and start offering these kind of benefits. Because I think the impact on the everyday Canadian for all of us would be huge. It's hard to even imagine what it would be like if the majority of the country had comprehensive mental health care just included as part of being an employee.
That's a wonderful outlook. And in many ways, I always find it surprising a little bit that, you know, we go for regular checkups to the doctor. I go to the chiropractor every 2 weeks, not because I have a bad back, but to prevent myself from having a bad back, right? But we don't think of the same thing with mental health. But I think if we did, to your point, everyone would be a lot further ahead. So I think that's a great outlook.
Rochelle, I want to thank you for doing this. I'm looking forward to future conversations because I think there's alignment with us, you know, with myself in the benefit space. So we'll have that conversation and hopefully continue and look at some opportunities together. For listeners interested in learning more about what you're doing at AHN, what's the best way for people to reach out?
Yeah, of course, you can go to our website. We're pretty easy to find. You just Google EHN Canada, and you can check out one of our many facilities. If you're looking for help, we do have 13 inpatient facilities across the country. Some of them are fully government funded. So if you don't have the funds, absolutely, you can still get help. And you can check out our outpatient programs. If you are looking to get in contact with me specifically, probably LinkedIn is your best bet. And if you are an employer who is hearing this and going, you know what, I do want to think about this. I do want to think about how I can support my employees better. Of course, you can get in touch with me directly And I'll probably connect you to the already mentioned Chris, who can really help you sort it out and figure out what you need to do.
Wonderful. Well, that does it for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as we did. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to join the conversation on LinkedIn. Success leaves clues. We'll talk to you next time, friends.